Chapter 1, Geneva Camp. All I could think of as we walked out of the airport in Dhaka was how was I going to accomplish the purpose for which I had come. Shahid and I were suddenly caught in a swarm of beggars, screaming, pulling on us, our clothes, our belongings. They were not like the mendicants of Pakistan, who could be dispersed with a gruff shout of, "Maaf karo, go away." Worse, I didn't know Bangla and was reluctant to use Urdu. While many would understand Urdu, it was that language that was the center of this tragedy, so I stuck to English. The beggars became more persistent, and I was having doubts if we would make it out of the airport. A young man came over and said very quietly in Urdu that we could make our escape in his rickshaw. There were other pedicab drivers also competing for a chance to drive us, but for some reason, maybe because he had spoken so politely, I chose him. Shahid wasn't so confident, and was insisting that we'd be better off taking a taxi, but I prevailed by dumping my bag in and climbing into the rickshaw. Now Shahid jumped in. The driver guided the three-wheel vehicle quickly toward the exit, and as we sped off, I heard shouts from the other taxi and rickshaw drivers that sounded angry and seemed directed toward us. Shahid, though out of practice, knew Bangla, and told me they were cursing at us. But we were well away from the airport, traveling along the widest road I had ever seen in Asia, when the driver turned to us and said in Urdu, "My name is Nurul Islam. They weren't cursing at you, but at me. I'm Bihari, and we're not supposed to pick up fares at the airport." Shahid had sent a telegram to the leadership of Geneva Camp to expect us, but we never knew they'd send someone to meet our flight. Apparently, Nurul had come especially for us. Nurul would not only be a source of transportation, but also my first teacher of what life was like for Biharis in Bangladesh. The first lesson was when we made three different stops in an attempt to get fuel for the rickshaw. Each time he rolled a sputtering pedicab into a gas station, he was refused service. Was there rationing? A fuel shortage? "No, happens all the time," he said. "Sometimes I have to go to many stations before I can find one who'll sell me fuel. Then I pay double. And sometimes I'm refused everywhere and lose a day's work." Then with a sigh, he added, "And of course, I have to push the rickshaw all the way back to camp." At the next gas station, I took matters into my hands. Nurul spoke fluent Bangla and translated what I said to the man at the pump. I gave him the "I'm an American tourist" routine. With that, he finally agreed to fill the tank, but not without a lecture about my choice of Bihari rickshaw driver. The term Bihari was beginning to sound a lot like nigger in that brief time since arriving in Bangladesh. As we left, however, the man at the pump added that he had nothing against Americans or Pakistanis. We reached the Mohammedpur section of Dhaka. I saw fine double-story homes and tall apartments. Nurul, a university student before 1971, now a ragged, lungi-clad rickshawwala, sadly pointed to one of those homes as we passed by it and said, "That was my house." We turned a corner, entered a narrow alley, and the world of those comfortable middle-class homes changed abruptly. Suddenly, there was one shabby bamboo hut squeezed against another. Geneva Camp No. 7, Mohammedpur, where 30,000 men, women, and children are housed on a few acres of what was once a school playground. We spent the first few hours at Geneva Camp headquarters meeting with Syed Muhammad Ali Husnain and others in the leadership. At around 11 o'clock that night, they took us on a brief tour. As we looked into some of the huts, each crammed with 10 to 15 people, a man rushed out of a doorway of his shelter. Suddenly, his hands were reaching for my throat, and as others pulled him back and held the violently struggling man, he screamed out, "Don't bring any more Pakistani tourists here! We're not animals in a zoo to be watched!" "She's a writer! An American! A Muslim!" came the shouts of others. There was a mass confusion as the man muttered, "No more! No more!" And others were shouting back, calling him pagle, crazy. More rational voices called out, "Why do you want to hurt her? She's come to help us." The man stopped fighting and sank to his knees. He broke down sobbing, "I'm old and tired. I'll die in this wretched camp." I moved close to him and sat down at his level on the ground so we could see eye to eye. "I'm sorry," I said, "and I wish I could promise you that what I write will help you get out." He looked back at me and rambled out a list of magazines and newspapers, of the few reporters over the years who had come into the camps. We opened up our lives to them, and they betrayed us. When those stories came out, we were called traitors, collaborators, even rapists. And sometimes, Pakistanis come here too. They look around, and then we never hear from them again. A woman standing behind him then said, "And sometimes the Pakistanis make marriage proposals." She pushed a toddler forward. "I spent just a few days with a husband who, after marrying me, was going to take me to Pakistan with him. But then he just left, abandoned me. Now I'm left here with a child to raise and disgraced." "Will you write about what she said?" the man asked. Morning. It was the conditions of the children of the camp that hit hardest during the first full day there. Most were thin and barefooted, the little ones naked. The survival rate of babies is about 50%, and the odds get worse after weaning. Many had rickets, malaria, and tuberculosis. Smallpox? Didn't we all hear it does not exist anymore? Well, it has made a return engagement in the camps. I saw 6 that appeared to be active cases of smallpox during my stay. I saw hundreds of others, under the age of 15, with the pitted facial scars typical of smallpox. 250 children died during the past year from complications of the common cold. As I toured Geneva Camp non-local school, I came across a woman standing in front of one of the classrooms, who was identified as a representative from World Vision. The greeting from this prim woman, with her thick hair wound in a bun and clad in a gray printed sari pinned at her shoulder, was less than friendly. "What are you doing here?" she demanded. I responded with a question of my own. "After seeing many films from World Vision on television in Los Angeles, I'd like to know what services are offered in these camps." If looks could kill, her frozen stare would have stopped my heart. Without answering my question, she turned and walked away. Far from her presence, I posed the same question to those in the camp. "We receive nothing," said Shawkat Ali, the headmaster of the school. Then I was cautioned to be very careful about what I said to any of the numerous Christian missionaries I was likely to run into. "If you say anything to anger the missionaries, they'll cause us problems," the headmaster explained. The woman from World Vision was the first of many missionaries I saw in the camps. But despite the presence of the missionaries, I saw no evidence of offers of relief, food, clothing, medicine, or medical care. What I did see were missionaries standing around the schools, or the children congregated, passing out Bibles and offering them a way out of the camps if they would accept Christianity. In that way, according to Hussein, the missionaries have managed to lure 8,000 children from the Mohammedpur camps to their missions over the past 5 years. Once at the missions, the children are put to work, making crafts and other things to sell to raise money. What education they do receive is Christian indoctrination. But they do more than seek converts among the children. The Bangladesh Red Crescent has administered the camps since 1975. Controlling their rations and water supply. The Red Crescent, just as the International Red Cross, ICRC, which administered the camps prior to 1975, is under the direct control of Christian missions that have been allowed to work without government restrictions since the creation of Bangladesh. Bangladesh is the only Muslim-majority state that seems to have given missionaries such a free hand, most likely because so much of the foreign aid received in Bangladesh has been channeled through Christian organizations. "Since its creation, Bangladesh has been a missionary's paradise," said Ayub Siddiqui, one of Geneva Camp's school teachers. He went on to add that any attempts over the years to protest the constant presence of the missionaries in the camps has led to the water supply and rations being cut off. As for World Vision, it apparently uses the camps to make films used in fundraising for the organization. None of the millions of dollars World Vision raises with those heart-wrenching documentaries ever benefits the Bihari camps. There are as many as 19,000 children in Geneva Camp, but only 275 can be accommodated in the school. Only 6 of the 66 camps in the country have a school at all. Yet despite that bleak picture, both Ayub Siddiqui and Shawkat Ali said every one of their students come in the top 10% of first division, A is the U.S. equivalent, in the district-wide examinations taken by all students in Bangladesh. That is in both Bangla language and English subjects, We had to fight hard for our students to be allowed to stand up for exams, and what we've achieved without proper books or learning materials has been through hard work, said Siddiqui. We actually have students from Bengali families whose parents pay hefty fees to send their children to the camp school, Shaukat Ali added. With the Urdu language banned countrywide, only in our schools can they still learn Urdu. But they come also because their children actually score higher in the examinations when they go through our school.